You're listening to the Punk News Podcast for the week of May 13th, 2014. All right, hey, welcome to the Punk News Podcast. I'm Adam White. We're recording, I guess all over the place, but I'm in Niagara Falls, Ontario, which is the honeymoon capital of the world, for all you lovers out there who... want to come hang out where like my dog poops when you're on your honeymoon. That's where I am. There's other people here too. Apparently a few of them, at least, John Gentile in, I don't know. You're always on a coast. That's a different coast than the last time I talked to you. Where are you, John?
I'm out here in Philadelphia right now, the East Coast, the infidelity capital of the world. So if you're looking to cheat on your spouse, come to Philadelphia. We got plenty of hot spots for you and your 30 years junior mistress.
You would think that we are at least on that infidelity spectrum here.
Niagara Falls?
Oh, you think about it. All the, full of like cheap motels, and it's like a, it's a destination place where you can go if you're, let's say you're in like the, I don't really know American geography, but let's say you're in like Chicago and you and your mistress are trying to get away. Niagara Falls would probably be a pretty close, but pretty far enough from Chicago place to go be with your mistress. Think about it.
Not to mention, but also, did you know that scientists have done studies where that poutine is the tastiest when you're committing infidelity? Like your taste buds respond more to poutine when you're cheating on a spouse.
Yeah, absolutely. If poutine was a regular thing here and this was Quebec, that would totally be a relevant point. Nice try. No one knows anything about anything here. Also, Mark Little is here from, I don't know, where are you from, Mark?
Compton. Compton, exactly. Or on the East Coast, which would be South Florida. I live in Fort Lauderdale. If you want to talk about mistresses, come down to South Florida and go down to Miami Beach where I work. And let's be honest, it's pretty much mistress capital of the United States.
It's like everywhere is awful, basically.
I think Mark trumped us all. Really, really, like Florida, like even more than like California, Florida really is the mistress capital of the world.
You have no idea how many 70-year-old men I see with 25-year-old women walking around.
I love how this show has started already. God, we haven't said anything yet and it's already stupid. Okay. So we had a bunch of stuff that happened this past week that we're going to talk about. And I guess like before anything, John, I want to give a shout out to your interview here.
Oh, well, thank you.
So John, just to prove what like an evil bastard he is, follows up his interview with like Satan himself with an interview with Keith Levine of Public Image Limited and The Clash, well, early The Clash. So that was very cool. I was very interested in that. It's funny because the readers didn't seem to care, but hey, I cared.
Well, Adam, you know what? I appreciate, because when I do an interview, I think, would Adam White appreciate it? So I know if Adam White appreciates it, I know I've done a good job. But I mean, that was a really, really fun interview to do because of marketing, because of fame, because of whatever. Certain punk rock guys become like legends while other guys kind of fade into the background. But I'd argue that Keith Levine is as important, or if not as important, as nearly as important as the rest of the guys in The Clash and the Sex Pistols. I mean, you could definitely make the argument that Keith Levine invented post-punk with PIL. You could make that argument.
Yeah, I mean, he's an incredibly, important character that doesn't really get talked about a lot in our timeline here. And I mean, what was weird for me was that like we started talking about it and then all of a sudden like Keith Levine is following me on Twitter. And I'm like, that's kind of weird.
Adam, you're famous. Keith Levine wants to know what you're up to.
I guess like now we're buddies with Keith Levine. Now, but that made me wonder, like, does no one appreciate Keith Levine to the point where like he's got to hang out with us on Twitter? Like.
I think a lot of people don't get Keith Levine because from that interview, he's a very, very interesting guy. And much like Johnny Rotten, he bucks what is expected of a punk rocker at almost every turn, So he's hard to really pin down as here's what Keith Levine thinks. He's very much an artist, if you ask me.
But I'm curious, why do you think Keith Levine has faded into the background so much?
I'll tell you why. Because PIL is a sonically more daring band than the Clash and the Sex Pistols. I'm not saying it's a better band, but sonically more unusual is a better way to put it. And so it's harder to get a hit single that way. And for the mere fact that they never really had a really hit single, the people don't know about them as much. That's why.
And he also wasn't with PIL for that long, was he?
Oh, he was for the first, well, 3.5 albums. That's like 4 years. You're thinking of Ja Wobble. Ja Wobble left after the second album.
Because I'm just thinking about PIL really being more centered around Johnny Rotten or John Lydon, really, just over the entire crux of their career. I mean, it seems to me more like it's been a Johnny Rotten side project in a way, or a solo project, but just under a different name, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah, I honestly, I mean, I don't know if that's entirely accurate, because like the sound of the first three PIL albums was developed by Keith Levine. I actually think, quite surprisingly, he was a little too modest. Like that weird guitar tone and like that really, like really frenetic shaking guitar, he invented that, and that's all over PIL records, you know.
That gives you something to check out again, actually. Thanks a lot.
Am I weird that I call them PIL? Like, can I not call them that?
You know, I you can, because he called them PIL. But what's funny is, I know it's Public Image Limited, but in my brain, I used to always say it's Public Image Liquidated. And so I almost called it that to him a couple of times. And then I even called the fourth album the wrong name. The album is This Is What You Wanted, This Is What You Get. But I called it This Is What You Wanted, This Is What You Deserve. And then his quip back to me is like, well, it's definitely what the fans didn't deserve. I'm like, oh, God, I'm an idiot.
So anyways, yeah, the interview was cool. You guys should go read it. And then, like, you know, more than me and John will have read it. So
just and learn something.
We interviewed Keith Levine just so Adam and John could read what he had to say.
Yeah, basically. I mean, Punk News to me has always been the most fun when I feel like I'm writing stories for myself or covering bands that only I give a shit about. And that always seems to work, because when I talk to someone later and they're like, oh man, Adam, I learned about the Constantines from you. I'm like, oh, that's nice. I wasn't really posting them for you. I was just posting them for me. But yeah. So anyways, let's talk about news and stuff that happened this week. The primary thing that seems to be dominating the conversation right now is the Riot Fest lineups have come out. These are three lineups for three events. Each event has a massive lineup. So we're going to split these between the three of us, because the math works and it's simple. So I'll take Toronto because Canada. You guys can fight it out over Chicago and Denver.
I get. Damn.
Ah. Sorry.
But John, during the Chicago thing of note for you, you're fully allowed to scream like a maniac.
I'm excited.
So, okay. Anyway, so Riot Fest is this annual music video. Someone on Reddit today called it Adult Warped Tour, which I kind of like, because that's like sort of what it's become, right? I like that. Adult Warped Tour. Anyways, so the lineup for this yearly event, which takes place in three cities, has been announced. So Toronto is September 6th and 7th, Chicago September 12th and 14th, and Denver September 19th and 21st. So here we go. I'm going to see how many of these I can get through here. So Riot Fest Toronto, September 6th and 7th. City in Color, Metric, The National, Billy Talent, Rise Against, The Flaming Lips, Social D, Death Tab for Cutie, Death from Above 1979, Brand New, Paul Weller of The Jam, AWOL Nation, Stars, The Head and the Heart, Dropkick Murphys, Die Antwood, Tokyo Police Club, The New Pornographers, Bring Me the Horizon, Taking Back Sunday, The Afghan Whigs, Alkaline Trio, Glassjaw, Bob Mould of Husker Du, Thurston Moore of Sonic Youth, Buzzcocks, Clutch, Newfound Glory, Circa Survive, Manchester Orchestra, Lucero, Tidal Fight, Bad Sons, Citizen, Lemuria, Mountie's Pup, Nostalgia, Radkey, Rubble Bucket, or Rubble Bicket, whatever, Pentimento, Bronco, The Hotelier, Laura Stevenson, The Beaches, Somos, Restorations, Say Yes, Seaway, Wounds, and Little Big League. So that's your Toronto lineup. You know, the big punk names that are living at the top of this, of course, are going to be your Social Distortion, your Rise Against, your Dropkick Murphys. But there's some cool solo people that are involved in this. You got Paul Weller here. You got Bob Mould, Thurston Moore. Buzzcocks are playing this thing, which is completely awesome. The Toronto dates have always been, had completely sort of erratic lineups to me when I see them all grouped together like this, because you'll see bands like Bring Me the Horizon And then you'll see bands like Buzzcocks, and you go like, how does this work? But last year when it happened, the 2 days that they split it into were almost entirely tailored to there being like, this one is for like the young emo kids, and this next day is for the old people. And they had like, they completely split the lineup along those lines. So I've got to imagine there's people that went to one day and not the other and were perfectly okay with that because they were so different. I don't know if that's going to happen this year, but it could, because they're kind of playing both ends of the spectrum. So there, that's Toronto.
Are we talking about our opinion of Riot Fest during this hoedown? Or are we going to talk about the hoedowns and then talk about our opinion of the Riot Fest?
We will talk about our opinion once we get through this list of bands that we're only a third through.
They're very good.
Okay.
So I guess I need to read the entire list for Riot Fest Chicago?
Yes.
All right. Wow. This is a big one. This is even bigger than Toronto because it's The Cure, Jane's Addiction, and I believe they're doing one of the full album sets. The National, Rise Against, Weezer, The Flaming Lips, Social Distortion, Slayer, yes. The Offspring, Wu-Tang Clan, Sam I Am, Descendants.
Sam Hain, son! Sam Hain!
Oh my god, I am so sorry. And actually, but I should
Sam
say,
I Am also Sam is playing that same date.
The real pronunciation, which is Sawane.
Sawane.
Thank you. Descendants, Tegan and Sarah, Metric, Cheap Trick, Pussy Riot, which I believe is only the two ladies that were just released from prison recently. Patti Smith, Take You Back Sunday, Die Antwoord, I hope I said that correctly. City in Color, Paul Weller, The Used, Bring Me the Horizon, NOFX, also playing a full album set. Dropkick Murphys, Gogol Bordello, Of Mice and Men, Mastodon, The Afghan Whigs, Naked Raygun, also doing a full album set. Cockspire, Dashboard Confessional, Superchunk, Billy Bragg, Blue Meanies, Lucero, Newfound Glory, Sousin with Anthony Green, Muddy Buddy Bosstones, The Murder City Devils, Mudhoney, I love Mudhoney, Failure, Hot Snakes, The Danny
Hot Snakes! Sorry.
Thurston Moore from Sonic Youth, Circus Survive, The Get Up Kids, Motion City Soundtrack. Get Up Kids are also doing a full album set. Me First and the Gimme Gimmies, Streetlight Manifesto, Clutch, Guar, and I don't know how that's going to happen, but I'm sure we're going to talk about it. Buzzcocks, Andrew WK with a full band set, Bouncing Souls, Stiff Little Fingers, Face to Face, Kurt Vile, Marky Ramone with the Bouncing Souls, which I'm really excited to see, and Waves.
And also on Riot Fest Denver, September 19 to 21. Friday, The Cure, The National, Rise Against, Weezer, Social Distortion, The Flaming Lips, Primus, Slayer, Sublime with Rome, Wu-Tang Clan, TV on the Radio, Descendants, A Day to Remember, NOFX, Die Artwood, Dropkick Murphys, Bring Me the Horizon, Gogol Bordello, and Violent Femmes, City in Color, The Used, Taking Back Sunday, Manchester Orchestra, Newfound Glory, Lucero, Failure, Hot Snakes, Me First and the Gimme Gimmies, Clutch, Bouncing Souls, Face to Face, Glassjaw, Buzz, Cox, Dum Dum Girls, Bob Mold, Stiff Little Fingers, all, La Dispute, Mineral, We Came as Romans, The Expendables, 303, The Menzingers, Big Frida, The Orwells, Pacifier, Larry and His Flask, Nostalgia, Skaters, In the Valley Below, Dad's Piano, Become the Teeth, I Am the Avalanche, Rad Key, Cerebral Palsy, Red Key Radio, Wounds, The Unlikely Candidate, Soul, and DJ Pain 1, The Bots, Tiny Moving Parts, Plague Vendor, My Body Sings, Electric, at Riot Fest, Denver.
So, those are a lot of bands.
That was excellent, John.
Yeah. So, okay, so I guess, John, let's give you this one first.
Sam Hain!
Yeah.
So anyways, as people know, Sam Hain's playing Riot Fest Chicago. Sam Hain did play in 1999. They did a fairly extensive tour opening for Danzig. Oh, maybe the listeners don't even know. Sam Hain is Danzig's band between the Misfits and between Danzig. And really, they've got two albums and an EP, and the lineups is almost entirely different on all of it. So it's basically Danzig and Erie Vaughn, or Danzig and Lyle Preslaw, or Danzig and Chuck Biscuits, I think. Danzig and London May, all these different guys. But Sam Hain is an awesome, I'm a huge fan of Sam Hain. They're darker and harder than the Misfits, and more grimy and I guess muddy, murky than Danzig. So in many ways, they're the best Danzig. I mean, whatever Danzig band I'm listening to is my favorite Danzig band, but Samhain is very unique, very scary, harder and darker than the Misfits. They're a great band. They're doing a whole album set of Initium. That's their first album, but it's only like 22 minutes long. I'm super excited for this, and I really am thinking about going out to Chicago to see Samhain, because for most of these festivals, I say, well, you know what, though? There's no sense in spending all this money to go out there, because these bands will come around anyways, you know? But the thing is, Danzig doesn't tour that much these days at all. And he only did Danzig Legacy in like four or five places. Danzig Legacy is where he did Misfits tunes, then Samhain tunes, then Danzig tunes. And I went and I saw that, and it was amazing. It was so amazing. But this is all Samhain. So I'm thinking he's going to do like all of Initium, and like probably like almost all of the Unholy Passion EP, and almost all of Samhain 3. So I'm super excited for this. Also, I mean, like, I actually think this year's lineup is not quite as good as last year, because last year we had Motorhead, we had Flag, we had Peter Hook and the Light, but there's a lot more special performance this year, so I'm really thinking about going to Chicago. On top of that, though, you got Patti Smith, which is awesome, but also you've got Gwar, and I don't know what Gwar is going, I don't know if they're going to have special vocalists or not. In a way, I don't want to see Gwar because it would make me too sad almost. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, is Dave Brocky's death a prank? And I know it's not, but I'd be lying if I didn't say that was 1% of the thought I was having with regard to this Gwar performance. Because I actually wrote Gwar's PR guy an email, and he basically said, it's totally hush-hush, and we're not going to say anything about it right now. So I don't know, man. So basically, Gwar had no comment on their Riot Fest set. So I'm super excited. I totally might go out and see this. This looks cool, man.
Yeah, I'm with you. Honestly, I've been talking about this on Facebook with a few people also, that I'm really into this year's Riot Fest up in Chicago, and Samhain is one of the reasons why I want to go also. And I saw the tour last, I believe it was last October, mid-October, they came down here, and that Misfits set was amazing.
You saw Danzig Legacy, or you saw Danzig and Danzig doing the Misfits?
I saw Danzig with Doyle doing the Misfits. Yeah. And I guess it was like he was doing the 25th anniversary or whatever of Danzig or whatever year it is. And the Misfits set was just absolutely incredible. And to see Samhain play, or to see some version of Samhain playing, I think would be absolutely incredible. But that's one question I have, is what lineup it would be.
Honestly, I don't even really care. I mean, even if it's Danzig's band, Danzig, I just want to see Danzig doing those songs. I guess my ideal lineup would be Danzig, London May, and Erie Vaughan, which I guess is essentially Danzig 3. Because Danzig 1 is actually Danzig, Lyle Presnell a little bit, but he's only on a couple of the tracks. So, I mean, it would be awesome if it was London May and Erie Vaughan, but I'd be lying if it was just like Danzig and his normal band, like the guy from Prong and a couple, I forget who, Tommy Victor and a couple other guys. Like I wouldn't really care that much if it was just Danzig and his band doing Samhain stuff.
Yeah, the drummer from Typo Negative, actually.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay, I could kind of get into that. I can't imagine, honestly, I can't imagine London May not being a part of it, because I've seen interviews with him over the last few years where he seems so attached to that legacy.
Danzig is not cool with one guy and is cool with the other guy, Erie Vaughan and London May. Do you know which one it is? Oh, I've been saying Lyle Preslar. It's Steve Zing, not Lyle Preslar. Or no, it is what? Lyle. I think maybe it is Lyle Preslar.
I can't imagine Lyle Preslar playing with them.
Let me look. He definitely won't be on it at this. But
I mean, he played on it like four or five songs on their on the first record.
Yeah, it was Lyle Preslar. Yeah, I was right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But I can't imagine he's going to be playing live with
them. And there's Todd Youth too. He's one of the big guys too from Samhain.
Sure.
I know Danzig doesn't get along with one of those guys. I don't know which one it is though.
Doesn't seem like Danzig gets along with many people though.
Well, you know, I don't blame Danzig, because I mean, if you ask me, Danzig is a genius when it comes to composing music, and you can't hold someone that excels at the level that Danzig excels at to a normal person. It comes with certain quirks. You see that, you know, with guys like Albert Einstein, who used to ride his bicycle naked. You see it with guys like Steve Jobs, who was an asshole to everybody he ever met and didn't care about consumers' rights at all. You know what I'm just saying? Is these guys tend to be a little unusual. And in Danzig's case, I give Danzig pretty much an unlimited free pass, short of him, like, doing reprehensible things.
I just want to make it clear for the record that John Gentile just compared Danzig to Albert Einstein and Steve Jobs on this podcast.
I honestly, this might sound a little weird, but I think Danzig excels at music at the level that Albert Einstein excelled at physics, and I'm not even kidding.
Bold.
That's okay. I don't even know where to go with that. I am going to tweet it though.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay. I got to say, that is awesome. I like Danzig, but that's a bold statement.
Well, I mean, honestly, like if you ask me, Danzig might be the greatest songwriter of all time. I mean, he's that. I'm a huge fan of Danzig, all his bands. But when it comes to actually writing songs, if you look at his career from 1977 through now, he's a genius at writing songs. He knows how to write a good song. I don't know how I can phrase that. Like if you look at Minor Threat rules, and those songs are awesome, but if you really break the songs down, the songs aren't necessarily great songs compared to, say, Nervous Breakdown, which is a great song. I think Danzig has more of a skill at writing songs than maybe anybody else has ever existed.
That's all right. Someone should write us in and tell us if that is something that they agree with. Podcast@punknews.org if anyone wants to send us an email or money. You could wire us money. Have you guys gone to a Riot Fest?
Negative.
I've never gone to Riot Fest. I really want to go this year, though.
I have a hard time, like, really mentally processing how these things play out. I get that, like, the Riot Fest Chicago is, and Denver are each 3 days, so they have bigger ban lists. But I'm still looking at their ban list, and it's still fucking enormous. And there's like, and more to be announced. And there's a bunch of question mark secret bands all over the lists and everything like that. And just like, dear God, like that's a big undertaking.
I'm not
knocking it. I just can't mentally fathom how the mechanics of something like this works.
I got to say, one of the things that appeals to me about the lineups this year is the fact that they're doing the full album sets, which I know some people have complained about recently, but there are some of the bands that are playing, like, for example, Jane's Addiction doing All of Nothing Shocking. To me, that's just fantastic. I am all about that, and I'm a big Jane's Addiction fan. To catch some of those sets where they're doing the full albums, especially the full classic albums, that's great. That's one of the things that's really got me hooked in this year.
Yeah, I'm not always a huge fan of the whole album set because one of my favorite things about concerts is being surprised. What are they going to play next? What are they going to play next? As I said before, even like last week before, like the Melvins is cool because they completely changed the songs around and everything. When I saw Slayer do Raining Blood, it was cool, but I wasn't super excited because I knew like what song was going to come next. With Samhain, though, the albums are like 22 minutes long, so I'm totally excited to see it.
But you know something, to interrupt, I saw the Slayer tour when they did Rain and Blood in its entirety before with the blood and everything.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I liked about that was that because it's such a short record, I mean, it's barely 30 minutes long, because it's so small, that was one of the things that my friends and I were really be able to get into because we knew it was coming next. And we got really excited because we knew, oh, this is going to be that part where, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It was cool how they broke, like they played a normal set, then played Angel of Death and then broke and then came back and did the rest of the album. I thought that was cool. Do you think Slayer will be able to do justice to Rain and Blood with Paul Bostaff and the guitarist, I forget the guitarist name from Exodus, Gary Holt? Will they be able to do it?
Gary Holt, I've seen a lot of videos with Gary Holt playing, and I mean the guy's a phenomenal guitarist. With Paul Bostaff, I mean the guy was in the band for 10 years or so. They're not going to be the same band they were before, but at this point, it's become the Tom and Carrie show, or I guess it's the Carrie and Tom show.
Honestly, like that's not a bad way to look at it, and I've sort of said that before. It's like I don't really like if I can't have Slayer, I'm happy with Tom and Carrie doing Slayer songs. You know what I mean?
Well, it's the best you're going to get.
Yeah.
I mean, there's really nothing else you're going to get at this point. And if you didn't see the original Slayer, you're not going to see that again. It's just never going to happen. And to wish for that, it's just kind of a pipe dream. But to see those songs live and the guys that are playing it right now, from what I've seen, are totally competent and amazing. And the guys that are mostly responsible for those songs are still up there playing. I'm fully behind it.
Adam, how about Descendants doing All of Milo Goes to College?
That's really cool. I think it's cool that you got both All and Descendants in Denver, right? Or is it in?
And Chicago, I think. Or maybe not, actually.
Does Chicago have All?
No. All is just Denver. It's just Denver. All and Descendants is just Denver, yeah.
This is a big, crazy lineup. Now, do they break? I'm trying to figure out if they've broken down the days on this. don't see any lineups yet.
I don't think they break it down until it gets closer to the show.
Yeah. Well, hey, this is a big deal fest-wise. It's become a bigger deal because I remember like why Riot Fest was, you know, well, I guess by its nature when it was smaller was it was, you know, we talked about it every year, but it was still such a regional thing. It's pretty much I feel that we talk about it more than Warped Tour these days. I mean, and that's probably because Warped Tour just books a bunch of shit that we don't care about, but we do, and that's interesting. Oh, this is a big fest. NoFX playing Punk and Drublic.
They were supposed to play that last tour, as a matter of fact, which they didn't.
The Offspring is playing Smash, which is, I would imagine, probably one of the only Offspring records that they can play without Dexter's voice cracking and sounding like a small child. I'm just going to read this list and insult people now. Yeah. Okay. So anyways, Riot Fest. There's a lot of people that are playing Riot Fest. You should go look at the lists and go to those shows if that's your thing. You want to move on?
Yeah, let's move it, baby.
All right. So next story here. Joyce Manor, a band out of Long Beach, California, which is a big favorite of the punk news audience, have announced that they are releasing their next full length on Epitaph Records. The record is called Never Hungover Again and is due out on July 22nd of 2014. January 22nd already happened. It's the follow-up to their last album, which came out on Asian Man, which was called Of All Things I Will Soon Grow Tired. And they've released a video for a song from the record called Catalina Fight Song. And it features some karate. So there you go. You can find the link to that on Punk News. So there you go, Joyce Manor on Epitaph. That's really interesting to me. I feel that Epitaph is, I don't know. I feel like they're signing things again that I care about. And that's good.
Yeah, I wonder how Mike Park feels about it. If you talk to Mike Park, he's like, oh, all the bands on my labels are family, and I'm so happy when they sign the bigger labels and stuff. But he's been getting poached a lot lately. He got poached for Andrew Jackson Jihad. He got poached for Joyce Manor. So, I mean, I certainly don't blame the bands. You got to go with whoever can. I mean, as I said before, bands don't work for labels. Labels work for bands. You got to go with whoever can work for you the best, you know. But Mike Park, or is this symptomatic of saying Mike Park has phenomenal taste of what the kids like? You know what I'm saying?
I'm going with Mike Park has phenomenal taste of what the kids like. I don't get the impression that Asian Man is very possessive of the stuff that they have. They're not, you know, they're a small operation. They're not the kind of thing where I think anyone works with them with the expectation that it's going to be a 30-year relationship or anything.
Mm.
Not that bands are ever around for 30 years anymore, but, you know. But Joyce Manor, I really like Joyce Manor. And there's a reason why I really like Joyce Manor, and this song is evidence of it, the one that we linked in the video, is that everything they play is incredibly short, which totally appeals to the part of me that thinks that punk bands should just, you know, get in there, bang out one really great chorus, and then stop the song and make a new one. I'm totally a fan of that kind of songwriting. I like that these are so short. I think they're frustratingly short for some people that want to hear, you know, the hook again or whatever, but I don't. I want them just to, like, burn through, you know, 1.5 to 1 minute, you know, little chunks of song and just go, 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 go and finish the record. I don't know why that appeals to me. It always has. Usually you don't hear it from bands that sound like this. I mean, usually you hear that more from bands that are in the, in that kind of like post Buzzcocks, post Ramones kind of style of stuff. But these guys do it too. And I like it. Just gotta let that hang there.
I got a question. I want one of the Punk News kids to help me out with this. Is I've asked this many times and no one can give me a straight answer. One of the guys in Joyce Manor has got a tattoo that starts at his wrist that goes all the way up to his shoulder. It's all black. You know, it's called a black sleeve. Like, what is that? So if you know, kids, send me an email at podcast@punknews.org. I want to know what that's like. I've seen many, I actually saw it more like 3 or 4 years ago, but I still see it. Like, it's where kids will just get from their wrist to their shoulder, just black, entirely black, solid black, like almost like Under Armour, but it's skin. What is that? What's the is that like a secret club or something? Or what is that?
It's a real serious cover up.
You think it's covering of tattoos?
No, I'm just being facetious. I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, so anyway, kids, if you know, reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Also of interest is composer-conductor Jonas Niedzieja has refused The Shape of Punk to come for orchestral performance. And actually, you can go to the Punk News website. The piece is called Shape in the Shambles. You can go to the Punk News website and click on it. You got to go through some Swedish. Refuse of Swedish, right? You got to go through some Swedish. And you can click on Listener, and you can hear this. Did you guys check this out, the orchestral performance of Refuse Shape of Punk to come?
When I first got onto that website, because it's all in Swedish and I wasn't paying a ton of attention when I got on there, I did not click on the right thing. And then I ended up with somewhere with an audio player, so I just started listening to it. And I got like 6 minutes into some like wandering chamber music, and I was like, what the fuck? And then I realized, no, this is not an incredibly loose adaptation of Refused. This is not anything that I'm supposed to be listening to. So then I eventually found it. And it's pretty weird. Did you guys listen to this? Did it not strike you as like super bizarre?
It is, but I think it's cool because the idea of with Shape the Punk to Shape of Punk to come, I think the general idea is that like punk rock shouldn't have boundaries, so we can do musically whatever we want. So, you know, they added in EDM and all this weird stuff. So he's just taking that a step further and saying, you want to get weird, baby, let's take, you know, punk rock, the revolutionary music, and apply it to the most classical form of music there is. So I thought it was clever. I thought it was cool, man.
I mean, inventive, I'll give it that. It was imaginative, but I'm kind of with Adam on this, is that I got into it and I started to listen. And like you said, Adam, it was tough for me to navigate because of the Swedish. But once I finally found it, I just, as much as I love Refuse and I love that record, there was just nothing there that even made me want to continue listening to it. It was tough, to be honest with you. I'm definitely on the side of interesting, but not down with it.
It's that like that vocal thing they keep doing. It freaks me out. Where just like all of a sudden like the music will basically stop when, you know, there would normally be lyrics, and the lyrics are presented in the form of like some sort of, I suppose it's in Swedish, so I'm probably not reading it entirely how it's intended, but to me it sounds like the guttural howling of some eldritch horror that they've dragged out of the depths is just like in the background barking away creepily, and then like the music starts again. It's
the new noise.
Shit, it's weird. I can't deal with it.
Nice use of eldritch, Adam. That was well done.
I thought awesome. So is it Eldritch?
No, it's Eldritch. It's Eldritch. I believe that's how it's said.
There you go. I know words. Anyways. Yeah, so that's something you can go listen to. It's streaming online. It is super weird. I imagine that people that liked Text would really be into it. Remember Text?
No, I don't know what that is.
It was like everyone else in Refuse, after Refused... everyone but Dennis, they went and they formed this band called Text, and I don't remember much about them except that I remember listening to them and going like, this is like the art end of Refused, clearly.
But wasn't Noise Conspiracy like the art end of Refused as well?
No, Noise Conspiracy was like total dumb pop end.
Oh, was
like
it?
Like that was the divergence to me. Like I liked Noise Conspiracy a lot, but it wasn't high art or anything.
Mm. See, honestly, like I'm not anti-Refuse. I'm just not a huge fan. I gotta go back and try to understand that album again. Because last time I checked it out, I thought it was cool, but my mind wasn't blown like people say it is. But I gotta check it out again.
I think part of the problem is that like Refused, as good as they were, led to the formation of like every band I don't like now.
Like Falling in Reverse.
Ouch. There are just tons of like every speaking of Epitaph here, every horrible band that Epitaph signed that they've clearly signed because it appeals to kids and helps fund the machine that is Epitaph, but it was not meant to be sold to the Punk News audience. So whatever those bands are, I'm just going to look at their list here. Let's see what we got. I haven't heard of half this shit. I don't know. I've never heard of any of these bands. Falling in Reverse, Retox,
I like Retox.
Is Retox a band? Yeah, I don't know.
I think you're understanding Retox. Retox is almost like power violence, grindcore, but like with a clever edge to it.
Yeah, okay. Justin from the Locust.
Plague Vendor?
Yeah. Adam, aren't you a Locust fan? I thought you were a Locust fan.
No, Locusts are scary. Plague Vendor? I don't know. Who's that?
That's a
I Killed the Prom Queen.
That's a whack band.
Survive This! Exclamation mark.
Survive This, man.
Skip the Foreplay? Jesus.
What? You skip the Foreplay? They're like a modern Broken Side. You know what? They're like, you know, we like to slap women around and have sex with women and treat women like
Ghost Inside.
Objects.
Obey the Brave. Who are these bands?
Great bands. Adam, I'm a huge fan of all those bands.
I don't know who any of these are.
I love those
bands. Anyway, so all of those bands I mentioned, except for the ones that I inadvertently insulted because they didn't fall into the stereotype that I'm trying to get a fourth, all those bands that are legitimately getting my ire are in some way, unfortunately, probably really influenced by Refused. Or were influenced by a less shitty band that was really influenced by Refused. Like, if you look at that family tree, a lot of that shit gets back to Refused. And it's not their fault. That's just sort of what happened. Like, if your grandkids are huge dicks, that's not your fault necessarily.
I think it is if your grandkids are dicks. I think your great-grandkids, if they're
sure,
dicks.
Okay. If some, yeah. Okay, so yeah, all right. Grandkids you could have some influence over, but let's say great-grandkids. So it's that sort of thing.
Well, fair enough. Speaking of a band that the kids love, Brendan Kelly and Sam Russo are releasing a split. Brendan Kelly released a track called Pigs, which is a acoustic version of These Pigs Seem to Be Getting the Best of Me. It's coming out, I think, real soon on Red Scare. It's called Split the Tip. And I think this song is supposed to be about Peter Murphy. It is supposed to be about Peter Murphy of Bauhaus. So what do you guys think of this track?
This is cool. It's a version of that song that was on the split. So like, I feel like that I had heard it. But I like Brendan Kelly's solo stuff. I like hearing him do his own thing outside of the Lawrence Arms. So yeah. Hello.
I'm here.
Everyone here?
I guess, is Mark, are you there? Oh, I guess Mark's gone. All right, well, let's play a song and then maybe we'll get Mark back on the pod. Adam, I think maybe Mark's been gone for a while because we've had like a bunch of like quiet, like you and I have just been waiting for him to respond, you know? And then we just jumped in and then like there's nothing there, so we just jumped in. I think maybe Mark's been gone for a while.
Wow. That sucks. Okay, let's play some songs. What do you got?
Here's what I got. This is cool, man. Is Alternative Tentacles is reissuing basically the complete discography by a band called Frantics. I'd never even heard of this band before. They're from Denver in like 1982, 1983. They put out two EPs and a demo cassette. And honestly, man, like I was really surprised about how good this band was. It's kind of like halfway between like, well, one third of the way between Black Flag, Flipper, and like D-Beat. And it's like hard, nasty, self-destructive. It's got that low, noisy, grimy groove, kind of like Amphetamine Reptile kind of bands. It's wild, mean stuff. The compilation is coming out May 27, and it's called My Dad's an Effing Alcoholic. And let's play the title track because it's pretty representative of the band, and it's awesome. This is My Dad's an Effing Alcoholic by Frantics, coming out on Alternative Tentacles.
Fucking night.
We're back, John. That was cool.
Yeah, man. I'm down with the hard, the mean, the nasty. You know, I can only hear about so many guys with their anxieties and how they're insecure with themselves. Every once in a while, I just need that self-destructive punk rock with like, my dad's an alcoholic. I hate cops. I want to shoot heroin. Sharon does a lot of needles. Let's see what else. We noticed. Dance is a punk. Static Kling. You know, this is cool. I should have mentioned this before. They do I don't know if it's a piss take or if it's genuine enthusiasm. They do this wild cover of Interstellar Overdrive by Pink Floyd, which is really cool. So, honestly, people, check out this CD. It's really cool.
All right. Well, people will do that. I've got a song later in the show for you that's of similar attitude, I guess.
Yeah.
So anyways, okay, so next story here, Body Count. Ice-T's hardcore metal hybrid act have released their first single through Ice-T's own Final Level podcast, which probably has more people listening to it than this one. And that track is titled Talk Shit, Get Shot.
Bam!
Yeah, the album, which I guess keeping with theme here, is called Manslaughter, is due out on June 10th. So if you want to check out the podcast, they posted the thing to YouTube. The song is at about the 34-minute mark if you want to hop ahead in that show. Not that I'm advising you to. I mean, listen up to that point. But anyways, yeah, so I don't want to get on Ice-T's bad side.
You don't want to get on Ice-T's bad side. No.
I mean, all the fucking evidence is that it's like, God, you heard this song. So anyways, yeah.
You don't want to get shot.
I don't. I'm worried.
We better just delete this whole podcast.
We might want to be quiet
pretend
now.
It never happened. You know?
We just cut all of this out. I don't know. Should we even talk about this? I'm worried now.
I checked it out. I'm a big Ice-T fan. Actually, I'm a real big Ice-T hip-hop fan. I'm a pretty big Body Count fan. The surprising thing is in the comments, it's got a lot of hate. But if you go on the Punk News Facebook, people are insane about this band. Ice-T Body Count gets like almost more comments on Punk News' Facebook than anything else. Body Count got 3 times as many likes as Masked Intruder did on the Punk News Facebook, which I don't know what that says.
That's crazy.
But I checked out the track. I thought it was cool, man. Honestly, I'm not a huge Body Count fan, but I thought this track was really, really cool. So I'm probably going to check out the album, man. I think it's cool. A lot of the kids were hating on it. And this actually really kind of pissed me off. Like, some people were like, oh, Ice-T, he's talking about shooting people. Oh, I can't take it. I'm too delicate for a song about shooting people. This is Ice-T, man. When did people become so wimpy that you can't listen to the original gangster, the guy that invented the word gangster rap, talk about shooting people? It's Ice-T. You know what I'm saying? Listen, toughen up, people. Ice-T.
I am a big Ice-T fan from back in the day, and I saw Ice-T at the first Lollapalooza also, and I've seen Body Count as well. I saw Body Count on my 21st birthday. But we got to be honest here. Ice-T is 56 years old, and this is, I don't know, good song, but when you think about Ice-T now, and he's been on Law & Order for, what, 12 years, 13 years, 14 years, it rings kind of hollow. In a way.
I disagree. Here's why. I got the same exact argument about Ice Cube. Maybe even more about Ice Cube. People are like, Ice Cube, Ice-T, you guys aren't gangsta anymore. You guys are making movies or on TV. But listen, gangster rap is not about shooting people and selling drugs and going to jail.
True.
If you ask the original gangster rappers, gangster rap is about improving yourself, owning yourself, being able to do what you want to do, and making money while doing it. And that is precisely what Ice Cube and Ice-T have done. That is, they've created their own companies, they've created their own way to make income, and they still put out banging music. So, I mean, if you ask me, Ice Cube and Ice-T are the epitome of gangsterism. The epitome. People are like, Ice-T's on Law & Order. He's not a gangster anymore. Let me tell you, Ice-T's making tons of cash on Law & Order. He found a way to better his life and that allows him to still make the music that he wants to make. So he's an artist that's expressing himself the way he wants to express himself and making tons of cash on the side. That's like the best of both worlds. So anyone talks hate on Ice-T, you need to go back and research your gangster rap.
How long has it been since Ice-T's made music?
Ice-T?
Yeah.
He hasn't made hip-hop in a long time, like probably like 5 or 6 or 7 years.
And the last Body Count album was...
Oh, like 15 years ago, I think. Like 2001, right. I think.
I'm still not going to say anything about this, because I fear. I fear for my overall well-being here.
But you live in another country, so I think there are laws.
Doesn't matter with Ice-T, man.
His reach is long.
Ice-T does not care.
All right, so John, this next story, I've got to imagine it was written by, yeah, okay. Remember I was talking about how like when my favorite stories is when I write stories and only I give a shit about.
Well, true, but actually this band is like really, really popular down in Southern California. I hate to always refer to Facebook, but if you go to their Facebook, they've got a ton of like on. Let me see how many likes they've got on Facebook.
No, I'm totally cool with this being some esoteric band. I mean, I guess they're not esoteric then, but it seems pretty esoteric to me. But anyways, cool. So here you go. How do you pronounce this?
30,
did you say the X?
I think you don't. 30,000 likes on Facebook.
You don't say the X, eh?
Yeah, you don't. Yeah.
Uh-huh, I see. Okay, so modern grindcore Satanists AC/DC have released their first song from their upcoming album, Antichrist Demoncore. The track is called Filicide, which means a parent killing a child. You can hear the tune by searching them up on Punk News. It is AC/DC if you're trying to find them. This is not the kind of thing that I'm usually into, so I'll throw it to you.
Yeah, actually, though, like this track is wildly different than their previous tunes. Their previous tunes are like people like say, you know, it's not power violence; it's grindcore. It's not grindcore; it's power violence. It's fastcore. It all sounds the same to me. But like their early tracks, like you know, those 15-20 minute like blast songs. You know, this is actually way different than anything they've released today. It's almost 2 minutes long, and it's almost more like just like a heavy metal tune with like slow, heavy chugging. It's almost like crust punk. This I like this track a lot, but AC/DC, AC/DC is they're a really clever band. Like even though they're Satanists, they're not really. It's more common. Like they've got song about Wookiees. They've got songs about Ninja Turtles. So they're a band that's self-referential. And honestly, it looks like this might be they're not going to ever be huge, but this might bring a much wider exposure. I think that's cool because I dig the music. I think they're probably one of the most clever, you know, fastcore, power violence, grindcore, heavy core bands, and so I'm really excited for this.
I kind of like the song. I never listened to them before, actually, and the description that I saw on the website actually kind of turned me on. I want to check them out. I dug it. Actually, I listened to it 5 or 6 times before I realized I'd listened to it 5 or 6 times. It just kind of passed really quickly, and just kind of had it on a loop. I'd be curious to check out what they sound like on their previous records. I mean, John, you sound like you've been a fan of theirs for a while, so I'd kind of defer to you.
I wasn't actually even a fan. What happened is I pitched an interview to them to another publication because like it's just an interesting story. And so with some bands, when you interview them, you actually like learn to appreciate their music, and that's what happened with this band. So they're cool. Their earlier songs are way different. I think they're all free on Bandcamp. And they're all like 20 seconds long. So, you know, if you're into harder, meaner, nastier music, you should check it out.
When you say it's an interesting story, what do you mean? I mean, because the whole Satanist vibe, or well, is there something else?
They're Satanists, but they're not really Satanists.
So it's for show?
No, well, but everyone knows they're not Satanists. It's like a joke, you know what I mean?
Okay.
So, Adam, are you there?
I am.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it's like the idea is this, is a lot of bands are anti-Christianity because, you know, they're supposed to be, like, hypocritical or whatever. Like, especially these black metal bands. But the black metal bands, you know, say, like, they murder people and, you know, worship Satan. Like, AC/DC's perspective is, like, you don't actually do anything. You don't burn down churches. You don't kill people. You just put on costumes and say you do. So they're kind
of evil.
So they're, like, making fun of that, but they're also commenting on religion. So they're not a band that you can say, oh, they do this. They're more nuanced than that, but they're also pretty funny. So if you're into that kind of stuff, check it out. Meanwhile, Greg Hetson has finally released a statement on his stance in Bad Religion. About a year ago, people noticed that Greg Hetson was not on stage with Bad Religion. There was rumors that he'd left the band or was kicked out of the band. Meanwhile, in his spot was a fellow called Mike Dimkich, who I don't really know, but I guess that guy's been in a lot of other bands too. Anyway, Greg Hetson via Twitter finally, after a year of not being in the band, released a statement confirming that he's not in the band. Here's what he said. He said, as some people noticed, I have left Bad Religion. Thanks to everyone for the 29 plus years of support, which that's a long time to, you know, leave a band afterwards. People might also know Greg Hetson was one of the founding members of the Circle Jerks, and he was in an early version of Red Cross. Meanwhile, Bad Religion's Jay Bentley said, Greg Hetson is dealing with some personal issues. If he wishes to make a statement, we will support that. If he chooses not to, we will support that. Mike Dimkich is indeed helping us out right now, and we are genuinely appreciative. So it looks like Greg Hetson's out of the band for good. You know, there's been a lot of comment on his personal life. It looks like he's been having some issues with that, but I don't know if you can make a direct correlation between that and him leaving. Well, I guess actually you can make a direct correlation between that and him leaving the band. But, I mean, basically, I don't think it's going to affect the band that much because he's the third guitarist in Bad Religion, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, yes and no. I mean, like, yeah, I guess, like, you know, Greg doesn't really tour with them that much, or at least he wasn't when they were touring, and I don't imagine that he does so much these days. So I'm saying Greg, but I meant, like, Mr. Greg. Or, God, I meant Mr. Brett. Fuck, I can't even see his spot. I don't know what I'm saying. Okay, back up. Okay, I'm backing my whole Bad Religion mind dump up here. So, Mr. Brett, I guess, you know, since he rejoined, is he the second guitarist now? Is he the first guitarist?
I guess he's the first.
Yeah, he is, but I still don't think he tours with them is what I was getting at. So, yeah, Greg,
isn't he
was,
like, the studio guitarist?
Yeah, like, I feel like he's writing a lot of the songs, and I guess if they're, like, playing in L.A. or something like that, he's probably with them. But I think if they're playing in the middle of, like, you know, Shitburg, Idaho, I don't think that he's there.
Don't underestimate Shitburg, Idaho, Adam. Shitburg, Idaho has some real nice attractions to it.
I just say it may not attract, you know, it may not distract him from running Epitaph. That's all I'm getting at. So anyways, so I feel that, like, Greg has been a pretty integral part of the group. But yeah, I mean, they do have a lot of guitarists, so I guess they can swap them out. I mean, Bad Religion is pretty much an institution at this point. It's going to survive a lot of member shifts, save, you know, Greg.
Adam, so you think he will be missed, as it seems what you're implying.
I think he'll be missed. Like, I don't want to underestimate, like, you know, the part that he's had in that band. I think they'll survive, but I think he'll be missed. I think that visually he's such a big part of the band, just that he was, you know.
So short and bald?
His short,
with those
bald
glasses?
Little, yeah, I mean, that's kind of a bummer, but I feel like I've seen Greg Hetson play like 7 million times at this point in my life, so, you know, it's not a lineup that I'm going to, like, rue myself for not having seen when it was together or anything like that, but, you know, sucks that he's out. I hope he gets help with whatever personal stuff he's going through. I don't exactly know what that is.
Well,
so.
Actually, he's made this public, so I guess we can talk about this. On his Twitter, he posted, like, 1 year sober. Yeah, that's public. So it seems that he's doing okay with whatever he's dealing with. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, hey, if being healthy means you're not in Bad Religion anymore, then that's cool.
I tell you, band-wise, though, it's been rough for Greg Hetson because he was supposed to do a Circle Jerks album with Keith Morse in 2008. And then Keith Morse quit the band and joins Off. And Off becomes, not huge, but everyone loves Off, you know?
Love Off.
And then he gets kicked out of Bad Religion. Rough year for bands for Greg Hetson. Rough couple of years.
But did he get kicked out, or did he take time off?
Of Bad Religion?
Right.
Well, he's out.
Well, but did he get kicked out, or did he leave?
Oh, I would guess that he just didn't come to practice, you know, or didn't, no, I'm going to say maybe he wasn't invited to meetings, you know? I don't know.
But apparently he's also got another band going on. I mean, I'm looking on a Facebook page right now. He's got a band called General Fucking Principle.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, that band plays like a bar of like 50 people, where Bad Religion was playing to like, you know, 5,000 people or more.
Sure.
That is a great name for a band, though.
You think? Why?
I don't know. It just strikes me as great. As soon as you said it, I was like, yeah. That was my initial reaction.
It's the general effing principle of the matter.
He was GFP.
He's also doing punk rock karaoke, which I haven't been to yet, but I really want to go to.
I feel, has he always been, I mean, that thing's been going on for a long time. I'm just wondering if that's always been him in it.
I know he's in it right now.
Hmm. So, anyways, that's cool. All right, you want to do another song, get another story? What do you think?
Yeah, I think we can finish off these last two stories and play a tune.
All right, what do we got? What's next on the list?
We'll blast this one pretty quickly. And actually, let's just close out with this last one, come to think of it. Falling Universe have released a cover of Gangsta's Paradise by Coolio. Not only that, Coolio is in their video, but for some reason, he doesn't rap on the track in the video. He just stands there. So here's the question. Falling Universe is terrible. This song is terrible. The question is, though, but this gets tons of notice because I found this. I thought this video was just hilarious because it's Coolio hanging around Ronnie Radke with Ronnie Radke rapping and then screaming, which is so bad it's good, you know. So is the joke on me? Is this what they're are they trying to get notoriety by just being so terrible, or does Ronnie Radke see himself as a Tommy Lee figure and he thinks he's the man, and the reason people hate him so much is because everyone's jealous and that's why he's so popular? Because I mean, the fact is, Falling Universe is a very popular band. And also, he's 30 and he's doing stuff like this. Or 34.
Okay. I think he totally takes himself seriously, to be honest with you. And when I watched this video, just like you, I could not help but laugh and revel in how awesomely bad and ridiculous it was. I mean, it's so bad that everybody really does need to see it. But yeah, I think he takes himself seriously. And it was I was embarrassed for him in a way.
I wasn't, just laughing it up. I was not embarrassed for him, I'll tell you.
I mean, it was hilarious. I mean, it's absolutely hysterical.
I love how Coolio just like stands there like shit, like nods his head the whole time.
Oh my god, I didn't actually watch this, but I'm watching it as you guys are talking.
You have Holy to see shit. It.
Do you like Coolio in it, Matt, Adam?
So I think this is amazing, like getting Adam's reaction to
honestly,
it right now.
I bet you Coolio, they probably got like $10,000. You know what I mean? Maybe not even.
I bet you that he got paid by like the amount that he moved. Because sometimes he's just like, he's just standing there perfectly still, but he's like, I'll give you a slight sway, but that's $500.
Sometimes you want me to sway back and forth? Coolio's there.
That's a grand.
But here's the question, and you'll notice that we couldn't even embed this because that's the way Punk Goes 90 has their YouTube set up. So we had the link to their YouTube page for people to see it. Is the joke on us? Because, you know, by posting this, you know, we're hypothetically increasing his fame, or if not, he's getting, you know, fractions of a penny from YouTube views. So is the joke on us? And even if it is, should we go along with it anyway because it gives us so much enjoyment?
You know something, in a way, that's a really good point. I didn't even think about that. Honestly, one of the big jokes I thought was the shout outs that he gave at the end also, where he's like, you know, shout out to Epitaph and to Punk Goes 90s and the Punk Goes 90s bands and Falling in Reverse. It's just, oh my gosh.
All Coolio pointed. That's like $300 right there.
How many points do you want? Can we get 3 points, Coolio?
Oh, there's Cookie Monster growling in this, too.
I love how Adam's like listening to it as we're talking, and he's giving us play-by-play detail.
I know, exactly. It's the live version of Adam seeing the video.
This is making me dumb.
It's 3 minutes you're never going to have back.
Oh, God. And I'm multitasking. Like, I'm technically doing the podcast, right, while I'm watching this. So you figure it's not time wasted, but it is.
All right, boys.
It really is.
You'll probably watch it again.
We could have been talking about something so much more relevant to the world and life.
But we have to engage in whimsy as well. But here's the question. Ronnie Radke's been around for like 6 or 7 years now. How much time does – because remember how some people were about Broken Side? Broken Side was here and gone in 6 months. Ronnie Radke's pushing year 7. How much longer is Ronnie Radke going to be around for?
But how much of that time has been spent in jail?
Some time, actually. He was in jail for, like, killing somebody.
So that should subtract.
How much time do you think he's got left?
I can't say that without really knowing who this appeals to. Like, I don't know who this appeals to. I don't know who actually listens to this.
I'll tell you who's at the concerts. How can I say this delicately? It's girls aged 14 to 17 and some guys aged 14 to 17, but mostly girls. That's who it is.
Where are these people's parents? What haven't they taught them?
In jail with Ronnie Radke.
God. Oh my God. I mean, this is one of these things that, like, I look at this and it is so far outside of it's so far outside of my experience and what I expect, how I relate to punk rock or whatever, that I can't even put myself in the shoes of someone where I get this. Like, there's a lot of stuff that I don't like, but I can get why people like it. Like, I can't do like grindcore, but I totally get that people like grindcore and that ones that are in it are really into it. And that's cool. Like, there's, you know, there's all sorts of genres and stuff that fall under punk rock that like, that I can understand why people like, even if it's not my thing, but man, this is so far out there that I think that so much of the way that I view music is predicated on this, like, you know, probably really bullshitty, but, you know, super ingrained into punk rock authenticity thing, that I see something like this and it just does not compute.
I'd be like, shitting on rappers like I'm shitting in Pampers.
Man. Oh, God. You know what? This is what I want email about. Who listens to this? Like, specifically, who listens to this that also listens to the kind of music that we usually talk about? Like, if you are an off fan and you are a Falling in Reverse fan at the same, and you're the same person, I want to understand this. I want inside your head.
That's good. Adam, let's challenge a listener to provide a good argument as to why Falling in Reverse has merit. And we'll read it earnestly. Like, we won't make fun of them. We'll, like, read their letter, right?
We will. I won't make fun of them. I don't understand. I can't even make fun of it because I don't understand. I feel like I'm on an alien world, and I'm not even speaking to something that is carbon based. It is a silicon based life form. I have no vantage point by which to communicate with this thing.
Podcast@punknews.org. And I have to correct myself. I said Ronnie Radke killed somebody. That's not technically correct. Ronnie Radke was involved in a fight where an 18-year-old boy got killed. No one knows who killed the 18-year-old boy. Ronnie Radke went to jail for violating parole after that.
It is just mind-boggling here.
And people are sending their 14-year-old daughters to see this dude. And he's
30. Yeah. I mean, it's not just like he's, you know, it's not just that it's like a shitty band that kids happen to be into, but it's, you know, ultimately harmless if you really take that away from it. Like, this dude sucks, like, as a person.
Adam, are we being morally incorrect by posting this video?
I don't know. I'm gonna go lie down. That's what I'm getting
well,
out of
well,
this.
Well, Adam, send us out with a smooth tune. How about that? So we can feel better about ourselves.
Lord, Falling in Reverse. Okay, a smooth tune. This is a song from a Hamilton, Ontario garage band called TV Freaks. And maybe I played them before on the podcast, but I don't really care. There's so many good kind of like garage punk things coming out of Hamilton, Ontario, and this is one of them. This album was released the last year in September on Schizophrenic Records out of Hamilton. The song I'm going to play for you is called Pusher. There is a super Stooges influence on this thing.
I'm liking it already.
Yeah, and it's totally something John would be into, and it's fuzzy and sludgy and mean, and that's what we want to get rid of the Ronnie Radke that's rolling around in our heads right now. So this song is called Pusher by Hamilton's TV Freaks from their album 2.
Looking for action. If that's an illusion.
wraps up this week's Punk News Podcast. Still hanging out with Coolio. Thanks for listening. Adam, thanks for being here.
I try.
Mark, thanks for being here.
Thanks a lot, you guys.
And as always, you can reach that podcast at punknews.org. And we'll see you next week. In the meantime, be sure to check out Ronnie Radke's newest jam with MC Hammer. Check you later.
Yes!